You're just joining us. You're listening to Spirit of the Valley on KGVM, Gallatin Valley Community Radio. Today we're talking with Sean Phoenix, who is a shamanic practitioner. Let's get back to the conversation.
When you first started to have these experiences, when you, like you said, you went to this first workshop and you were working with your friend who had gone to the workshop. Was it you were like totally on board, like, yes, this is real, and like I'm 100% in? Or was there a period of maybe some adjustment to this very different reality?
Yeah.
Though, like you said, you had some of this unnamed experience from childhood, but like, I feel like that's, I mean, I can imagine it being like, whoa, okay. Like,
yeah, it was totally like, whoa. It was, yeah. And it's funny, now I teach people how to journey. Mm-hmm. And it seems like it's kind of a classic response, at least from our dominant culture, mm-hmm. for people to begin with this kind of like, I must be making it up. This can't really be happening. Mm-hmm. Like that's generally the first response, which included mine. And I feel like I really kind of wavered for quite some years in this kind of sense of, am I making it up? Or is it really happening? Is it just that the drumbeat and me becoming calm and quiet and setting intention is activating more of my brain, like my higher kind of functions? They say we don't use that much of our brains. Maybe it's waking up more of my brain and I'm making up some really good stuff. I kept practicing, even feeling like I was making it up because I felt better as a result. It was creating good things in my life. I look back and I think about the very first journey I took. And when I met the being who told me she was my power animal, my very first response was, I must be making it up because I've been so into this animal. I've got earrings and t-shirts and postcards, and I really have always thought they're so cool. So of course, that's who I'm going to think is my power animal.
Mm-hmm.
And in the journey, this animal got nose to nose with me in my face and was like, why do you think you've always been into me? Because I've always been with you. Mm-hmm. And just kind of turn it on its head for me. One of the things that I often hear in shamanic gatherings is the phrase, imagination is the language of spirit. And that has really made so much sense to me. I've really come to this sense of what we're doing when we get into that trance state is we are collaborating with mystery.
Mm-hmm.
Our brains are kind of becoming more open and expansive, and the divine, however we perceive it, is finding ways to connect with our brains, ways that will make sense, ways that we can kind of catalog and perceive and have a language, have visions and a story for the ineffable.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe there's really all these groovy little animals running around in a different dimension. Maybe they are just coalescences of consciousness that appear in certain forms that will help me make sense of the experience.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, but
yeah,
I have come to the place where I don't need to understand the mechanism of what's happening.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's just some really transcendent, profound experiences happen.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I just love that. Like it sounds like for people who it works for, it's like it works whether or not you kind of believe what's mm-hmm. happening. Like that there's something in it that like something is happening, and you can maybe mm-hmm. name it a bunch of different ways. And I think about that, you know, in mystic traditions, whether it's mystic mm-hmm. Judaism or Islam or Christianity, that like there's just this like common experience of something is happening. There is something bigger than me, and like I am connecting to it. And this is the language I know to use to explain it and engage with it. But that there's a sort of
mm-hmm.
across cultures, these universal experiences of there is something more.
Yeah.
That's what draws me to these conversations with people and like to my work
mm-hmm.
in spiritual direction and my chaplaincy work is just to be witness to like what is the thing that showed up for you? And like, what was that like?
Ecstatic beyond naming.
Yeah.
That profoundly moving. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I know there'll be times when I journey for someone who has that kind of, I don't know if I believe it, but I'm kind of desperate. So please, I'll take whatever you can give me. Mm-hmm. And I narrate while I'm journeying for someone so they can kind of come along and they know what's happening in real time. And more often than not, when I complete the journey and I come back, I take off my blindfold, we sit up, they are weeping. Mm. They have seen places that they have felt without knowing. Mm-hmm. They know and recognize the place where I found their lost soul parts. They remember places and experiences that they had in their lives that they had forgotten, but I went there in the journey and witnessed it and helped gather and bring back what they needed to come into more wholeness. Sometimes I'll see things in the journey that seem really kooky and I'm hesitant to report them because they sound so silly. And then the client will say, oh my gosh, I can't believe you said that. There's no way you would have known that. But that was exactly like what my brother called me, or that was the little toy that my grandma gave me, or, you know, these weird little synchronicities that speak to people and kind of crack open that, I don't know, that real linear American brain. Mm-hmm. I find so many people are really yearning for that sense of mystery and the benevolent, loving, compassionate force in the universe. And it just resonates for them. I often hear clients, when we begin, they're like, oh, I just want to believe in something. I just want to believe in it. Uh-huh. And by the end of the session, they are... in that place. I don't know if I believe it or not, but something has changed inside.
Something happened. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so then it sounds like you do about a couple of different things. So there's like your practice for yourself that you do your own journeying. And mm-hmm. then you also teach and lead other folks on journeys. And then there's this piece that you were just talking about where you journey for other people.
Yes, I do all of those different things.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. The paradigm, basically, shamanism is all about helping others.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people will talk about, oh, the evil shaman, the bad shaman. Like, that's sorcery. When you're trying to manipulate unseen power, that's considered sorcery. Mm-hmm. To do harm to others or mm-hmm. to benefit ourselves at the cost of harming others. Mm-hmm. Shamanism basically evolved as a way to help others, to be that person in the community who's helping out, who can say, you know, I journeyed and in 3 days' time, there's a bunch of buffalo over that hill. So that's the direction we want to take our hunters.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's not really about doing it to benefit yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But I've still had really powerful experiences in benefiting myself. I had the experience last year of needing a surgery and really resisting it to the point where I was really kind of devastated and fighting the whole idea.
Uh-huh.
After doing a journey and talking to my helpers, they really, again, they like getting in my face, apparently. I need to have confrontation. But they were very clear about there's nothing to fear. Even though all the doctors around you are saying there's something to fear, there's nothing to fear. Even though this surgery is going to be done by an oncologist and you're going to be in the oncology ward of the hospital, there's no cancer. This is really something you need as a rite of passage for your spiritual evolution.
Mm.
You need to have your body kind of recalibrated in this way. Mm. And sure enough, like no cancer. It all went swimmingly. And the biggest thing for me was that I was able to feel really positive about it and let go of my inner emotional torture as I prepared myself for the surgery. People all around me were wringing their hands about cancer. It was so clear that that wasn't going to be a problem. part of the story. Mm. Yeah. So that's like working for myself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I teach people. I have a protocol I learned through the foundation for sure. Mm-hmm. And that's just the 5 session, 2 hours per session, kind of a curriculum that we follow, where I'm not doing any counseling work. I also am a counselor, but I'm not doing any of that. I'm just teaching people. They are doing their journeys. They narrate them. And then I can give them feedback on it and kind of help guide their practice and make sure that they're staying clean with the procedure for it. Mm-hmm. And then back before COVID hit, I was running a monthly group for people to practice in community with each other. Mm-hmm. And folks who were learning the same language, and we could share our journeys. We would all journey on the same intention and then come back and tell the story. And then we could learn from each other, which was pretty spiffy. I'd like to get that happening again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. COVID's really kind of thrown a wrench in a lot of ways that we are together or were together and hope to be together again.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm also curious, you know, I work with people who are dying sometimes. Mm-hmm. I work with people who are dying and, you know, really are like, what happens? What mm-hmm. happens? And like, definitely some of the folks I work with have a very clear understanding of what they believe happens. But does shamanism mm-hmm. offer an answer for what happens mm-hmm. after we die?
I think shamanism offers a pathway to explore what happens.
Mm.
And one part of my answer to that is a little inside joke among folks who have done retreats and trainings with the foundation. We learn quickly that whenever someone in a training asks a question of the teacher, usually the first thing out of the teacher's mouth as an answer is, well, that depends. And so it's true with this too, obviously, that I think that it is, again, the ineffable, hard to talk about.
Yeah.
We live so many different paths as human beings. We have so many different stories, teaching stories, cosmologies, belief systems. Mm-hmm. And I think ultimately we all kind of end up at the same place and having a similar experience, but we have these different stories and ways of understanding mm-hmm. what happens. But so, yes, in my journey work, I've done classes, retreat trainings in shamanism, dying and beyond.
Mm-hmm.
I've had my own journey work experiences of beginning a journey at the moment after my death and traveling from there to learn more about mm-hmm. what happens after death. Mm-hmm. At least what may happen for me after death.
Mm-hmm.
I've done work as well in the realm of depossession. And in that training and in that practice, it's about helping souls, helping spirits who have not successfully navigated their death, their crossing over, and have gotten stuck and needed help to find their way across mm-hmm. the right threshold for them. So I work with the dying too, and the recently dead mm-hmm. to kind of help them navigate to the next part of their soul's journey. Mm-hmm. I mean, we could spend days talking about what happens when someone dies. But it's definitely a landscape and a realm that I find really moving and beautiful, and I love being able to help. That might even be the place where I have the most resonance, is helping souls who believe that they're bad and they're going to go somewhere bad.
Mm.
Helping them realize, the way that one teacher said it was, we all have a free ticket to paradise.
Mm.
Because we all are from source, we all have source, divine God within us. And that is like our homing signal that will help us get in. It's our free pass. Mm-hmm. No matter how dirty our deed, like, we need to take stock, we need to make amends, but we all get to go home. I love helping souls learn that that's true, and watching their transformation and witnessing them cross over and the amazing parties in the beyond. All the family members who are so happy they finally made it to the party.
Yeah. It's
fascinating stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I learned as part of my, like, looking back at my life path and going, how far back was I doing this stuff or learning this stuff? My parents told me this story that when I was an infant, like, new, and my mom needed a break so she could take care of my baby, my brother as well. For some time, like maybe 6 months, every day, my mom would take me in my little basket over to her neighbor's house. Mrs. Racknell took care of me. And Mrs. Racknell was dying of cancer. And when I have gone back and journeyed to that time of my infancy and witnessed what was going on, darned if my little infant soul was helping Mrs. Racknell get ready for her passing.
Mm.
Like, as an infant, I was learning how to accompany the dying and how to support her and help her make her passage and kind of clearing the way for her. Yeah, that was, it's just very moving. I was kind of afraid of that work when I was first learning about it. I did not want to work with disembodied spirits who were confused or angry or invasive or disrespectful at all. But it's become so rich, pretty fascinating.
Yeah, it's interesting. You've said a couple of times, like, you mentioned, like, being safe in the practice and those kind of things, like, is there danger in in doing these journeys?
Yes, definitely. Michael Harner, the fellow who's credited with this 20th century revitalization and renaissance of shamanism and the founder of the Foundation for Shamanic Studies, he's often said shamanism isn't tiddlywinks. This is not just kind of playing around. There are beings in those other realms who have their own agendas and don't respect us and want to get their needs met in ways that we would not consider appropriate or good. There are invasive energetics that don't necessarily have sentience, that aren't beings, that also can cause us harm. They're considered intrusions. They can get into us and mess with us, whether it's a thought form, whether it's like a counselor might call it depression, but it show up as a dark cloud around somebody's head that's just like attached to them, like Will Pigpen and Charlie Brown. It's possible to lose parts of our soul. That's one of the healing things that a shamanic practitioner will do is retrieve lost soul parts and bring them back to the client. But you can lose soul just getting in there and journeying if you're not really very clear about the practice. If you don't have good discipline. I've worked with some clients who have done a lot of drugs and experienced a lot of mystical stuff, and they have had some psychic damage in those experiences because they were just kind of dissipating or floating around and kind of like at the whims of whatever breezes or beings would show up, instead of setting intention and knowing, basically, like, I don't always know where I'm going, but I always set an intention. It's like being in a trance and just drifting is like being in a car that doesn't, and going fast with no steering wheel. Yeah. It's just not the way I want to travel.
Yeah.
So yeah. And I also never journey without first calling my personal helping spirits. And they kind of make sure I don't get in over my head. They help, they vet other beings that I meet. They keep me safe. They help me stay resourced. They help me understand what I'm encountering, what's happening. They teach me how to work with new experiences. And I always kind of know, even if I don't know where I'm going, I know where I started from. And then I know how to retrace my steps and come back. So I'm not leaving parts of myself behind. Uh-huh. Yeah. 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 Michael Harner distinguished between journeying and tripping.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But journeying is this disciplined practice with a specific intention. Tripping is just kind of like, whoa, I don't know where I'm going, but I'm okay. Let's see what happens. Mm-hmm. And that can be a psychotic kind of experience, as well as, you know, the experience that is induced through some kind of hallucinogen. And he also said shamans are part-timers, that you don't want to be in that space all the time. It's not functional to be in this trance state all the time. Uh-huh. It's not functional to be trying to drive to the grocery store and be hallucinating and seeing spirits, and you don't know if they're real or do you need to put on the brakes for them, or are they not really there? So part-timers, it means we choose. Here's when I'm going to get into my altered state of consciousness. Here's how long I'm going to be there. And then here's when I'm going to come back. And then I can balance my checkbook and I can go to my job and I can take uh-huh. care of my health and my family. But I'm not always in this real woo-woo kind of diffuse, trancey kind of space. I love that. It just feels like good mental health to me.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think in so many ways, like ways that we kind of check out from reality in all kinds of different ways, like you don't want to live there. And if you mm-hmm. do want to live there, then like there's, I think, another question to be asked about, you know, what's going on.
Right. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Like we are only here in these lives and this consciousness for such a short period of time. Why would you want to check out? Like, okay. We're going to leave anyway pretty soon, and uh-huh. when you're looking at the vastness of time and space, so let's be here while we're here. Let's experience this while we're here to experience it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Sean, it's been so great to talk to you and so interesting, and I feel like this will be really rich also for the listeners to kind of have insight on this really different, I mean, it's interesting. I'm going to say like really different way of engaging with spirituality. And at the same time, this, like you were saying, really core intrinsic way that has existed in our history, you know, forever. Mm-hmm. Like it's sort of that both and about it.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of want to close with like, if I've now just listened to this and I'm like, oh my gosh, I want to do this thing. Like, what would your recommendation be for a listener if they're like, yeah, I want to try this on? Like, how would you suggest that they go about that, either with you or, you know, on their own?
Yeah, there are so many different ways to learn about shamanism. I think if you Google it, you will find 5 million
places
where you can get trained. Some are certainly more reputable than others. Some are going to be very culture bound. So I usually recommend the Foundation for Shamanic Studies because mm-hmm. of that focus on core shamanism, because yeah. of the rigor in their practice and their research and education. That's not the only way to go, but they mm-hmm. have some great training. There's a book by Michael Harner called The Way of the Shaman, which was a great beginning read, and it gives some hints on doing some little baby journeys on your own, ways to make it happen. There are people in this valley who do a bit of teaching in shamanism besides myself. Mm-hmm. I love the way that I teach people to journey. So, and I really enjoy it. It's really fun to see the lights come on for folks. So mm-hmm. those are a bunch of different ways. I do suggest connecting with some reputable source and not uh-huh. just kind of going commando without any kind of guardrails, because it is uh-huh. easy to get into the weeds or get into really uh-huh. deep water And I have worked with folks who have had that experience and they've needed some reparative, some healing work to help them come back from that. So it can be damaging to just kind of cowboy it on your own. I think it's important to find some reputable source for the training.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks again. And I will give you sort of a few minutes if there's any last, like, oh my gosh, I want to share this, or if not, that's okay.
I imagine there will be 5,000 things I'll think of that I'd like to share. But I think just that concept of it being everywhere on the earth, of shamanism being everywhere, that it's kind of, it's like drumming. The drumming is everywhere on the earth. Okay. And I really love drumming too. It's one of my favorite musical instruments because it belongs to all of us. Like all of us have a heartbeat. Mm-hmm. All of us have soul, I believe. Mm-hmm. And we all come from these ancient shamanic cultures. So we all have that capacity to be able to have a direct relationship with the divine, where we don't have to go through an intercessionary. We don't have to have a priest or a guru teach us or tell us or explain to us or translate for us. We can go right to the source for direct revelatory experiences. And man, if that doesn't light you up, I don't know what that.
Yeah. And I think also to put in there that like, it doesn't always work for everyone, right? Like it's in mm-hmm. there, but like it isn't necessarily everybody's way, right?
For sure. Yes. Yeah, it doesn't work for everyone. It has worked for 99% of the people who've come to me to look mm-hmm. for training. So right. It's pretty accessible.
Yeah.
Some folks' minds are too busy. The self-critic is too loud. Mm-hmm. Life is too busy. They're too depleted. There are times when I've tried to journey and I meet my helping spirits and they kind of like bar the door. They're like, honey, you're too tired. No, just go take a bath. Don't do this right now. Mm-hmm. Times when I can't for myself because I'm too desperate and I'm too needy and I need the help of my community to do it for me. Mm-hmm. It doesn't ring everybody's bell. Of course. Why? How could it? That's not right. What it is. For
me. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess it's mm-hmm. part of what I appreciate about it and about sort of how you explain it in your story of it is that like, it isn't like this is the only way or like this is mm-hmm. like the true way. It's like, here is one way that like really works for a lot of people, has a lot of history and like is really, you know, an amazing experience for those that it works for, but like it's also mm-hmm. not telling us this is it.
Right. Yeah, that just doesn't make sense with like, here we are, this experience of life. I think of it as like the every flavor buffet. Like, mm-hmm. There's way too much on that groaning board for us to experience in one lifetime. So we have to pick and choose and mm-hmm. and not everybody's going to want the chocolate pudding. Mm-hmm. Some people are going to want the green beans. So yay that it's all there for us to choose from. Yeah.
All right. Well, Sean, thank you so much for your time and your knowledge and your wisdom and insight. And that'll be that for today. So thank you so much.
Thank you. It was really lovely to chat with you.
This has been Spirit of the Valley with your host, Katie Michael Sanchez. Thanks for listening.